Jamie Locker with you in the Green Zone on this Monday afternoon. A little bit of blast of snow coming through, especially in the southwest portion of the province. Blowing snow on Highway 1 around the Maple Creek area and to the south. So you can bring us up to date on the highways around the southwestern portion of the province. 1-877-332-8255. A lot coming up here on the Green Zone. Of course, we will give you our Sunday school grades, top grades and failing grades from the Sunday of the National Football League. But there's one hockey team we want to put the spotlight on right now, and that is the top team in the Pacific Division. The Anaheim Ducks are at the top of the division. Christmas came early on Saturday night when Mitch Marner had a little oopsie and coughed up the game-winning goal in overtime against the Ducks. And to help us talk about, I would say, a surprise start to the season is Zach Kavanaugh of the, of course, he covers the Anaheim Ducks, joining us here on the Green Zone for the Sporting Tribune. Zach, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I love hearing these Canadian weather reports. For as cold as I think it is here down right here, certainly not Saskatchewan right now.
Yeah.
Oh, it was 7 degrees. This is bizarre. It was 7 degrees on Saturday. This is weird. Now, it should be minus 10. There should be 6 inches of snow right now. Like I was out doing yard work on the weekend.
Yeah, 44 degrees, Zach, just Fahrenheit for the American audience.
This is downright balmy, yeah. Zach.
it's I think a balmy 58 today here, 60-something.
He has his winter coat on.
Yeah, well.
Exactly.
My family went down to Cali, well, the Anaheim area for, you know, what's there, Disney, of course. And it's weird going to the beach and it's empty. And it's like, what a warm day. And people are like in sweaters.
Yeah, it's like 68 degrees.
The locals are like, what? You're Canadian, are you?
You're swimming.
Jumping into the ocean. Okay, whatever. But Zach, let's get to the Ducks. Are you surprised as we are that the Anaheim Ducks right now are at the top of the table in the Pacific?
I was sitting in the press box after the game on Saturday, and I turned to my Sporting Tribune editor who was there covering the Vegas side of things, and I just said, I still can't believe this is happening. We all expected the team to take some sort of improvement, you know, with Joel Quenneville coming in and all the young guys obviously just improving. You expect some sort of movement forward. But to say any of us expected this kind of leap, I don't think that it was in our wildest dreams that the Ducks would be on top of the division, beating Vegas twice, and really just in a comfortable position here as we enter the almighty dates of American Thanksgiving. But it's incredible to see what this team has done and how they've done it. And the fact that they keep doing it, you're sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it just doesn't seem to be coming.
So, Zach, I've watched a couple of games, and I'm not quite sure what Joel and the coaching staff is doing, because it looks like they've got a defensive structure going, but at the same time, it also looks like every once in a while, like the 80s Oilers, where they're run and gun, and they seem to have some freedom to play the way they want to play, but at the same time, there does seem to be some attempt at putting together a defensive identity for the team. Have you put your finger on it at all?
Yeah, so that was kind of a message from day one in training camp with Greg Cronin as coach, they were trying to run a man-on-man defensive system that just simply did not fit the roster. He wanted them to play like the Carolina Hurricanes, and you have to have a very specific, you know, lineup for that, as we all know. So Joel comes in and wants to do a zone read system, forcing pressure along the walls, getting those two-on-one battles to end the play quickly, and then get out on transition in the rush. And that is something that he has also preached in terms of getting into the play quickly, ending the plays quickly, getting out on the run, and letting this offensive talent be free-flowing. And make mistakes is something that he's also said. He's allowed the team to go out, and if you make a mistake or you jump off, if you, you know, just get out of line a little bit, there's backup in Lucas Dostal. But he's also going to say, okay, you made that mistake, don't make it again. but know like what your limits are. Whereas under Greg Cronin, there were mistakes were simply not allowed. They were trying to establish this foundation that made them kind of scared to make mistakes, scared to push up in the play. And so they're starting with that defensive base now, kind of protecting the house and forcing pressure,
yeah,
and then getting out on the run.
Okay.
So when you, is there an outscoring their problems going on here with the Ducks? They do have 80 goals. They have allowed 69. It's not a big plus-minus differential on goal scoring for a top team in the table. Or is this going to be life for the Anaheim Ducks, that they might still have to outscore their problems because it still is a young roster to try to hammer home a defensive structure?
Absolutely. You know, I think, and they are getting better. Like, if you look at the numbers from the first week to now, they are better. But I think they're also kind of comfortable letting up those chances because, like I mentioned, Lucas Dostal is playing, you know, on top of his game again this season. So that allows them to make those mistakes. But they are, I think the number one problem is not necessarily the structure. I think the structure is okay. They end up having trouble clearing the zone cleanly a lot. And then they get hemmed in, and then you just break down after a while. But I think that's their number one problem is the clean exits and then allowing those extra chances. But they are outscoring the problems, as you said, in that I think we all know that the toughest thing to do in this league is put the puck in the net, and no team knows that more than maybe the Anaheim Ducks. They found that offensive structure, or offensive flow, I should say, and the special teams is helping them out in ways that they hadn't in previous seasons as well. One of the worst power plays of the last 5 years combined, and now they're at least middle of the league, which is all you could have asked for out of this group. And that does allow them to paper over these mistakes. But I do feel like those defensive structure things are getting better as time goes along, as the players get more comfortable, as Jackson McCombs had a slow start and he kind of rounds into form, and Jacob Trouba's flourishing, though. So it's kind of a push and pull when it comes to the defensive side of things.
The interesting thing about a team in the States versus a team in Canada is, and maybe this isn't even a thing anymore, but it would be if you were in Calgary or Winnipeg or Toronto or Vancouver. Well, if you were in Vancouver, it would never go away. But the headline stuff. So I'm curious about where the fan base is on some of the more controversial things that have happened with the Ducks over the last year or so. So Gibson, he gets traded. Zegras gone, and then bringing in Joel Quenneville. Is that all just quiet because of the success the Ducks have had this year, or is it something that is still fodder for even just on the internet trolls?
I think it's the success certainly helps paper over that.
Yeah,
but I also think that the team did a very good job of sort of addressing all of these things as they were happening. With, you know, with the trades in the offseason, Gibson, the writing had been on the wall for a while, and I think we'd all accepted that this was Lucas Dostal's team, even if Gibson was going to be here this season. The mantle has shifted to Dostal as being the number one. Zegras is the one that will still get the fans riled up a little bit, because you look at that and you see how well he's playing, and you say, you wonder how well he could have played for Joel Quenneville, or you wonder, if you are still going to trade him, how much more value could you have had with him if you had just waited a little longer, waiting for the free agent market to play out, whatever. And with Joel, I think at the opening press conference, to have him and Verbeek both come out and answer every question that we lobbed towards them and be prepared and do their due diligence, have the owner, Henry Sandwelli, come out and address all these things head on. I don't think he's talked to the media in at least 5 years, since before I started covering the team at least. And they handled all that head on and open as much as they could. And from what I understand, they are living up to their promises that they mentioned, especially on Joel's end of things when it comes to working in the community. They're just not publicizing it as much. And the winning does a lot to cover up any sort of animosity that you would find in the fan base. And it's not, that stuff doesn't really break through anywhere anymore, which, you know, has its ups and downs. But I think the winning cures all things. Yeah.
Of course, this is such a great young core, guys, with, you know, Zegras traded, of course, bringing in pulling from Philly. But you have Leo Carlson leading the way at 20. Cutter Gauthier's amazing. Mason McTavish, it seems like I can't believe he's 22. It feels like he's been in the NHL for a decade.
Yeah, why have we been talking about him for 7 years?
Beckett Senecky. I know there's a lot of love for the defenseman, Matthew Schaefer, but should Beckett Senecky, and how high should he be in the running for Calder this year on his play early going with Anaheim?
Yeah, Beckett Senecky is a 19-year-old wonder. And when he showed up for rookie camp, he still looked very much like the 19-year-old that wasn't fully into his growing body quite yet. And we said, okay, he's still getting pushed off the puck, and he may have all the hockey IQ, but can he do this every day? And every single day after that was better than the one before it. And so now he's playing on one of the top lines. He's on Leo Carlson's line with Cutter Gauthier the last game and a half, and that's succeeding. When it comes to where he is in the Calder, it is a funny thing where he is going up against not only Schaefer, but Ivan Demidov, right? And all offseason, and especially during the preseason, the highlights of Demidov would come up, and everyone says, did the Ducks make a mistake? Who is Beckett Senecky? Can he do it? And he's right there with them. I mean, what is he? He's leading in goal scoring, tied in points. I think it's just very impressive. His hockey smarts is what stands out to me so much, shift in, shift out. The physical stuff kind of comes and goes, and he's 19 years old. But the way that he can get in lanes, make himself open, and how he has improved his defensive game is so impressive to me as a 19-year-old kid. And I don't know if you saw the play he made on the overtime winner against Utah earlier in the week, Olin Zellweger's goal. He gets the puck dead in the slot, 3-on-3, him and the goalie. Anybody else in the world would take this shot, especially a 19-year-old kid. And he had the presence of mind to take a half second, look off, and get to a guy that had an even wider open net. And it is truly impressive every single night. There's something that wows me about his game every night.
Well, Zach, a pleasure having you on. We'll have to keep your number in
the
Rolodex.
You down the road.
Exactly, because this is a Ducks team. I don't think they're going away anytime soon. And the core looks like they're built for years to come as well. As man, is the power shifting back to Cali, Zach, when it comes to the Pacific? With the Kings, the Ducks, and here comes Celebrini and the Sharks again.
Let's just pump our brakes on that.
Zach,
a little too early.
Yeah. Zach, thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys. Always happy to talk in the home of Ryan Getzlaff.
Right on. That is Zach Kavanagh joining us from Anaheim. Covers the Ducks, of course, for the Sporting Tribune. More coming up here on the Green Zone, but an update on the Canadian curling trials. How are our Sasky men's rinks doing? We'll bring you up to date as they try to get to Italy. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with the ear of the Green Zone. While curling might have been on your television over the weekend, the Canadian Olympic curling trials are a go in Halifax. As right now on the women's side, it is Kerry Anderson leading the way at 4-0. Team Rachel Holman is 3-1. Lost to Skrillic yesterday, but they bounced back earlier in the day. On the men's side, it's nearly must-win time for both the Ryland Kleider and Mike McEwen. Mike McEwen's 1-2 take on Cooey this evening. Kleider, meanwhile, is on the ice against Epping, yet to win a game, 0-3. But the main event tonight, it is Brad Gugu's rink against Matty Dunstone. Both those rinks are 3-0 at the top of the table. And a reminder,
Gugu just finds a way.
Oh, my goodness. Now they added Brendan Botcher, of course, to Gugu's
rink.
How
old is he? Is he late 40s?
Oh, yeah. He's been curling forever. 45.
I don't know.
He was just a kid when he won the Olympics with Russ Howard.
I remember that.
Just a kid.
And Russ played third.
He threw second, but
he was calling the game
at the other end.
That's right.
It was.
Okay, I'm 55. And when I bend into the hack,
he's
things hurt.
Though. Well, I'm younger than
things
Brad.
Things hurt.
Well,
you can't get out of your office chair.
When I went up against Wheels in our curling thing for the Briar that was in town, I almost needed a paramedic to get off the ice. And I'm a year younger than Brad Gugu. Like, that was not a good sight. I did beat Wheels, though.
That does not surprise me in the least.
There's your main event tonight. Matt Dunstone, Brad Guju, both ranks undefeated, 3-0 at the Canadian Olympic Trials. Hope you're having a great Monday, and I hope you had a great weekend. It was a good weather weekend for late November.
I don't want to talk about it, because you're going to throw the Jamie Jinx on this, and we're going to get, like, it's going to be minus 50 and 4 feet of snow by the end of Friday.
Well, that's just what's in the forecast. That has nothing to do with what I'm saying.
I'm not looking at the forecast. I'm not talking about the forecast. I'm just trying to enjoy what we have.
It's getting colder this week.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Just
get I'm those, ready. I'll
just,
prepare.
Just get those heated jackets ready to go this week. And, well, it's already, the snow's already
I want
hitting.
Heated mitts. Somebody had heated mitts at the Grey Cup, and I'm like, that's a strong move. The guys that were smart enough not to stay in the press box and were wrapping up just before the game.
You should write a blog on Locker's Grey Cup press box experience. It feels like
worst decision
you.
I made. Guess what else they don't have in the press box? Beer.
Not anymore.
You guys all ruined it.
No, Daryl's generation ruined it. Not my generation. It was Daryl's generation that ruined the booze in the press box.
I'll be writing that down to talk to him on Wednesday.
But yeah, it's a different experience if you're used to jumping up and yelling and screaming and having a beer. The press box is not a place for you.
I thought it was kind of cool. I get to be in the press box, watch the game.
You think it's cool.
And friends of mine were like, hey, cool, you get to be in the press box.
A lot of people tell me that. Hey, that must be cool. I'm like, not really.
It's awful. You don't want to do it. The fans have a way better.
It's way more fun sitting in the stands.
Way better.
A little harder for me to do my job sitting in the stands, but I have done it. At the end of the season, I watched the game from our season seats. With the kids and
yeah. Well, you live and learn.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk a little football of the four down variety. The National Football League yesterday.
What do you think is the biggest story from this weekend?
It's got to be for me. I think the biggest story is Shedeur Sanders.
See, I thought so too. But in our meeting this morning, everyone was like, "No, that's not it." And I'm like, "What? Really? Like, I know he didn't blow anybody away, but." He's such an arrogant little, right?
I thought I was going to have to hit the big red button. Corey Mace show up. What are we
like
doing?
On my, I don't know what it is about my Twitter. My social media feed was full of Browns Raiders, the two worst teams in the NFL. And it dominated the headlines. Like, listen, I get the Cowboys comeback and they beat the Eagles. That's very impressive, but I thought that was a big story, the Shedeur Sanders.
But Shedeur Sanders yesterday was the first Browns quarterback in 30 years to win their first start as a rookie. Mm-hmm. First time that they've had Manziel, they've had Baker Well, I can't list all the quarterbacks they've had. I'd be here until midnight listing the quarterbacks they've had over the last 30 years. But Shedeur Sanders won. All right? He won.
How did Deshaun Watson do in his first game?
Well, his rookie game would have been when he was with the Houston Texans, not the These are the Browns rookie quarterbacks.
Okay, so you can't really put him into that category. I get.
So, Shedeur Sanders, the Browns get a win, 24-10. There's a lot of heat on the head coach, Kevin Stefanski, for his post-game speech. Now, listen closely on how much time he spent on Shedeur Sanders' first ever start getting a win.
How about that road win? Stayed resilient together like I told you we needed to, right? Stay resilient together, and we fought together. How about Gage's big punt return on special teams? How about Corey, every single time you're out there pinning those guys doing your job? Great call. Offense wasn't perfect, wasn't perfect. How about that big play by Sam at the end? Huge play. Q, huge play. Harold making a big play. And then another rookie making his first start. Nice job, Shador. Well done. There's that old saying, save the best for last. How about that f***ing defensive performance?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy f***. Is what I have to say about that. 10 sacks by our defense.
Yeah.
10 sacks. Okay. I got one ball in my hand. Okay, I got a guy, he's got to get a cold every week, okay? He had a cold this week, wasn't feeling himself. 3 sacks, which gives him 18 on the season through 11 games, which breaks his own Browns record, Miles Garrett.
Come on, man.
Miles looked good.
In his 1:20 post-game speech, he spent about 3 seconds on his rookie quarterback winning his first ever start in Shedeur Sanders. And hey, another rookie start. Yay, Shedeur. Good job, bud. And let's move on.
So I heard Sanchez and Wilson talking about Shedeur. And I listened to a little piece that they did. And Luke made an interesting comment. He didn't say one way or the other that there is an issue in Cleveland. But he did say, moving forward, if they do keep going to Shedeur, which he said, and I'll be honest, he didn't have this... He didn't blow me away with his start, but he did get the win, and a win's a win. He said it'll be interesting to see what kind of reaction he gets from his teammates moving forward. Not just the coaching staff, but how the teammates
respond. Did you watch his post-game?
Yeah.
At the podium and on the field?
Yeah.
You would have thought Shedeur Sanders threw for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns in his first start. Yeah. He was all about himself. He was all about people want me to fail, and that's not going to happen. This was only 1 week of practice. No, it wasn't. You've been practicing with the Cleveland Browns all year from the start of training camp. Yes, week of practice as the starter, like every other backup gets when they have to fill in for the injured starter. It's like he was the first backup quarterback to ever get 1 week of practice and want to start. He's not. Many have been able to achieve that. And his one touchdown pass was a swing route that was caught 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage that Sampson turned into an epic 60-yard run because the Raiders' defense sucks and nobody touched him. Oh, yeah. And Shedeur, you beat the Raiders. Now, good. Hey, it's a win. That Cleveland hasn't had quarterbacks that can win football games.
Well,
this is going to go one of two ways. Shedeur Sanders is either going to be a starting quarterback in the National Football League for years to come, or he's the next Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, hot shot, big mouth quarterback who fizzles as teams get ready for him. It's going to go one of two ways for Shedeur Sanders, and we'll see. But my goodness, I thought the reason you were fell to the 5th round was your lack of humility.
Yeah.
Everybody said he's a bad teammate. He'll be a bad in the quarterback room. It'll be all about Shedeur. And he proved it yesterday. He proved why he fell. Not once was he like, our defense, Miles Garrett, well, it's 10 sacks. Our defense won this one. Ready to go. I can improve. No, it was all about, wow, aren't I great with 1 week of practice?
So you alluded to the fact that Stefanski may not, he was dragging his feet on naming a starter after the game, right?
He did name Shedeur Sanders today, the starter this week.
Today, yes. So, and they're playing this Sunday at home against the 49ers. So that may, do you think that's pressure from the ownership? Because whether you like Shedeur Sanders or not, there is a conversation right now in Saskatchewan on the Green Zone about this kid. And every sports show in Canada, the United States, is talking about Stephen A. Smith.
His dad is primetime. His dad is Deion Sanders, one of the biggest characters in NFL history. It's a story.
It's a story. And they may be putting pressure on them to throw him in. That's my take on it, because It's press. People are paying attention to this franchise again.
There's a lot being said about the Cleveland Browns organization that the ownership loves themselves Shedeur Sanders and what he can mean marketing and everything else wise. And Kevin Stefanski and the general manager are like, this kid's got a lot of work. Got a lot of work. By the way, if you're wondering about his actual stat line, Shedeur Sanders was 11 of 20. So just over 50% completion percentage. He had one big shot downfield, pretty impressive throw, although blown coverage again by the Raiders' masterful defense. And he did have the one touchdown pass, which was the running back taking it from 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage all the way to the end zone. He did throw one interception, which was terrible. He almost threw two others in that game, sacked once. It wasn't like Shedeur Sanders won that game for the Cleveland Browns.
Take everything out of it. Take the ownership, take marketing, take his dad out of it, take whether or not he's a good teammate, bad teammate, are you putting it? And I think Dylan's ready to go. I think they put Shedeur in because he got a win and because he's getting so much attention. But would you? Are you putting Dylan back in?
Well, he did clear concussion protocol, but it's not like Dylan Gabriel was lighting the world on fire and he wasn't getting wins.
So you're putting Shedeur in if you're...
Why the heck not?
Stefanski?
Okay. If you're the Browns, you got a QB who won a game. It's pretty easy.
I was surprised, I was surprised Pickard wasn't in net on Saturday. I was so mad. I was yelling at my TV when Skinner skated out. And he got a win. Right?
I know there's Cleveland Brown fans out there. Jeff, how you doing? 1-877-332-8255. Wait, both Cleveland Brown fans I know are named Jeff. What's up with that? One of them was in Vegas to watch that game against the Raiders. I thought that was a bad financial decision, but then I watched the Raiders play this year, and that was a very good financial decision to go to. It's almost guaranteed it's a free space on the bingo card, those Las Vegas Raiders this year. Frustrating as all get out. But Shedeur Sanders.
This is from Daryl. He's like, wow, so much hate on a player. Give the kid a chance. See, Daryl, here's the thing. He is such an arrogant. And it's a team
today,
sport. It's a team sport. You can't have that in your room.
Did you hear?
I'm sorry, Daryl.
His speech today was growing up with Deion Sanders. He said, our dad made us play in the inner city to get that dog in us. So we were going home to a 30,000 square foot house, but he still made sure we played inner city ball. And I'm like, you were still going to a 30,000 square foot house. Don't try to not give the silver spoon stuff. You grew up tough because you played inner city football and then went home to a 30,000 square foot home. Seriously, with the nanny there to cook and the chefs there to cook. I'm sorry, Shedeur. It's like Bronny James. You were privileged. But how are you going to take that privilege? Right now, it's coming across as a guy who thinks it should be given and not a guy who thinks he needs to earn it. 1-877-332-8255. But he gets more wins. He's going to earn it. We'll see. Well, I know he'll meet a better defense than the one he faced on Sunday when they play the 49ers this week. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKLM.